Sydney is beers at a pub by the beach with your mates. And Melbourne is a glass of wine in a cocktail bar with your friends.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Beste Zeit, dem Podcast zum Auslandsstudium von und mit College Contact. Ich bin Alexandra Michel.
Und ich bin Elias Merkel.
Und gemeinsam sind wir die Gastgeber dieses Podcasts, mit dem wir euer Fernweh wecken und euch dabei unterstützen wollen, eure ganz eigene beste Zeit zu erleben. Egal ob im Rahmen eines Auslandssemesters, einer Summer School oder auch eines kompletten Studiums im Ausland.
Heute sind wir besonders früh aufgestanden, denn wir werden gleich mit Katie Padilla und Simon Watson von der University of Technology Sydney in Australien sprechen. Die beiden sind uns 9 Stunden voraus, das heißt, in Sydney neigt sich der Tag langsam aber sicher dem Ende zu.
Genau, aber bevor Katie und Simon Feierabend machen, werden sie uns hoffentlich noch einiges über das Study Abroad-Programm der UTS und über die aktuelle Situation in Australien erzählen.
Da ich im Gegensatz zu dir noch nie in Australien war, bin ich sehr gespannt auf diese Folge und hoffe, dass ich genau wie ihr da draußen viele neue Eindrücke mitnehmen werde und vielleicht im Anschluss ein weiteres Reiseziel auf meine lange Bucketlist setzen kann.
Dann wollen wir euch auch gar nicht mehr länger auf die Folter spannen, sondern legen direkt los. Viel Spaß! Hello, Katie. Hi, Simon. Welcome to our podcast. We're really excited to have you.
G'day. It's great to be here.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having us on.
Fantastic. So believe it or not, you're the first Australian university on our podcast, and this is episode 9, so I think it's about time. And we have to start by asking the one question that our students keep asking us. When can international students finally come back to Australia?
Oh, that's a really good question that's been challenging us as well. But the latest good news is that vaccination rates are going to be around 90% in Australia in a few weeks' time. The government has agreed that borders can start to reopen and Australians can travel overseas. That's yet to be extended to students and other visitors coming to Australia. There is a condition that family members can come, but nobody, I think, would be a parent or a child of an Australian and be wanting to come on study abroad. So we estimate that probably by around March, borders will be much more fully open. So we think that our spring, your fall, your autumn, will be the time that students can come back for a session.
That is fantastic. So that would be your semester 2, starting in late July, early August, around Australia.
That's the go semester.
That is terrific. And I think that's very good timing because the audience that we have for our podcast are very often students that are starting to think about studying abroad, that are in the early stages of planning. And I think given that it's October now, that's a very good news for them. They can feel more confident planning to study in Australia next year.
Well, we hope so. And that's what we're planning for. So yeah, it'll be great.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But that all sounds really good. As the borders were closed, some of our students who had originally planned to study in Australia chose to go to California instead because they felt they would have a similar experience there, especially in terms of, you know, climate and lifestyle. Would you agree? Yeah.
Well, firstly, we have a really authentic and real English accent, not an American accent.
I noticed.
to be fair, there are some similarities, I suppose, between Sydney, the state of New South Wales, and California. They're both, I suppose, frontier countries, much more free thinking, etc. But there are some real differences. Certainly, if you're thinking about going to California, California is a really big state. Sydney and New South Wales is as big as California. I think our weather is much milder. It's somewhere in between. Our beaches are a million times better. And if you go to Northern California, like San Francisco, actually the water's freezing. It's 6 degrees. You can't even swim. So people have this image of California being a place that you can go and swim and it has great outdoor lifestyle. California's freezing in summer. Mark Twain quoted California as being the coldest summer he ever spent anywhere. But joking aside, I would say that you should come to Australia because it's actually much more relaxed and easygoing than America. Americans are actually just quite uptight. Sydney is a big, vibrant city. And it's, in fact, some ways you're going to have an experience somewhere between San Francisco and Los Angeles. It's vibrant, has lots of neighborhoods. It's kind of the tech capital of Australia. It has fantastic beaches. It has great kind of art and culture and events and lifestyle. So I think, but all with a much more relaxed attitude and much more easygoing than America. America is something you don't want to get on the wrong side of anyone or the wrong side of the law. You'll be in real trouble. Whereas maybe in Australia, you might be able to joke your way out of something. So there's some real, real cultural differences, I think. I would say California is a good second choice.
So Australia is the real deal.
Yeah.
Perfect. So I've noticed that most people who've been to Australia have a strong preference for either Sydney or Melbourne. Elias has never been to Australia. So what are some of the reasons that he should join Team Sydney, so to speak?
Well, to be fair, Melbourne is a great city. I had a choice to move because I come from regional Australia. I had a choice to move to either Sydney or Melbourne. And Melbourne is lovely. But Sydney, I just have three words for you. Beach, beach, and beach. Sydney has a much, much better outdoor lifestyle. So if you're interested in, it's surrounded by national parks. And if you're interested in being in a place that has a fantastic climate, it's much warmer in winter and much cooler in summer. It has heaps and heaps of different neighborhoods, and it has topography. It has hills, curves, bays, all kinds of different neighborhoods that you can find that all have a really different experience for you. It's the kind of place where you can find a little niche, a little pocket, and make yourself fit in. It's very open. It's incredibly international, and it's really friendly and outgoing kind of place where, as I said, anyone can fit in. I think, Melbourne talks about having coffee culture. Sydney has just as great a coffee culture. It just doesn't make such a big deal about it. kind of talk about Sydney versus Melbourne. Sydney is beers at a pub by the beach with your mates. And Melbourne is a glass of wine in a cocktail bar with your friends. Sydney is brash, glitzy, glamorous, whereas Melbourne is more calm and considered and thoughtful. So there is a real difference. So if you're looking for somewhere that's out there, fun, wild, exciting, something going on all of the time, then Sydney's your place. And it's a really great place to come for a study abroad because you have a great educational experience. But when you step out of the classroom, there's always something going on. It's vibrant and exciting all the time. And you can get to the beach or get out to nature really, really easily.
I think those are some really nice comparisons that you made. The funny thing is, though, whenever I have a conversation with someone from Sydney or from Melbourne, it's always the people from Melbourne that are making those comparisons.
Yes.
And I feel like, is it Sydney Siders? Is that how you call yourselves? Or how would you?
Yeah,
Sydney Siders. So Sydney Siders don't even make that comparison.
No. It's a little bit like, Melbourne, as I said, it is a great city. But it has a bit of a chip on its shoulder about not being Sydney.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, and I love Melbourne. I mean, I must admit that Melbourne was the first place I visited in Australia. And I think after my first, and I visited Melbourne, I visited a few other places and then ended my visit in Sydney. And I think after the first visit, I probably would have considered myself Team Melbourne just because that was the first experience I had in Australia, and I spent, I think, 6 or 7 days there and only 2 in Sydney at the end. So, but I visited both cities again and again, and I've really come to love Sydney too. And I think Sydney is spectacular in terms of setting. Mm. I mean, Melbourne is beautiful. There's fun things to do. It's great food. It's great sports events and all these things. But especially in terms of kind of the geography and the setting, it's just spectacular. It's like you turn a corner in Sydney and it's a completely different neighborhood. You have all these little kind of beaches. You have the Bondi to Coogee walk, which I'm sure we're going to talk about at some point in this podcast. But, and I think that walk was what won me over. It's like, right. I took it the other way. I took the Coogee to Bondi, and that was probably the best morning spent in years. And that won me over for Team Sydney.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm glad we have you on our side.
Very good. So Elias, what do you think?
I haven't made my decision yet, to be honest.
Okay. Then we'll ask you again at the very end.
Honestly, yeah. Let's keep this going and see.
We're still to win you over yet then.
Yeah.
All right. So
you have to work for it. Yeah.
Very good. So like many major cities, Katie, Sydney has more than one university. Why should students choose UTS for their study abroad adventure?
Sure. I suppose if you were to think of Sydney universities like siblings, then UTS would be like the, you know, young, friendly, outgoing, social sister, you know. It's just got a really vibrant, modern, innovative feel, and it's very welcoming. And students that come there usually feel that kind of sense of welcoming and friendliness. It's such an open, friendly environment, even as a staff member. We love working there for that reason, because it's just got that such a nice feel to the campus. So students usually comment on that when they come, and they had such a great time. But also because the classrooms and the way that the campus has been designed. So UTS has spent over $1 billion in the last 10 years developing the campus. So it's really modern. It's got some really great facilities, but also the classrooms have been set up in a way that students can really apply the knowledge that they're learning. So it's not just theoretical, you know, lectures and things like that. They go into these specially designed collaborative theatres and collaborative classrooms, and they meet with their other students, and they get to talk and work in groups together and really kind of discuss and think about real world problems, real life business cases and things like that, or other types of cases. And really, it's very practical and hands-on and much more collaborative and group project based than perhaps some other styles of teaching and learning. So that's something that our students really enjoy, is that kind of very practical nature of the UTS style of teaching.
And how would you describe the kind of student who would thrive at UTS and have the time of his or her life there? Because, you know, the name of our podcast is Beste Zeit, which roughly translates to time of your life. So we have to ask that question, of course.
So I suppose a student that would enjoy coming to us would be somebody that's really open to that style of learning, and that wants to make friends. There's so many opportunities on campus to be involved in lots of different things, even outside of the educational classroom. And, you know, the rankings of UTS has been going steadily up and up. So we're now in the top 150 in both the QS rankings and the Times Higher Education rankings as well. So, yeah, it's, I suppose, a student that wants that kind of city lifestyle in a modern university rather than a traditional kind of university. So it's different in that sense to some of the other universities. They're more the kind of traditional sandstone, whereas we're more of a city centre, modern, progressive kind of university.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you mentioned the university being in the city centre, and this is actually some of the positive feedback that we often get from students, that the location of the UTS campus is really unique. Can you tell us a little bit more about the geography of Sydney and, yeah, where the campus is exactly located?
Sure, of course, yeah. Well, yes, UTS has got a really great location. It's right in the centre of the city, and it's opposite our central train, bus and tram station. So For that reason, it's really great for transportation. So if a student wanted to, let's say, live on campus, they could then easily get any of those modes of transport, and they could head out for a day trip somewhere, head to the Blue Mountains, head down the coast, the South Coast, or they could easily head on one of the trams and head down down our new tram line all the way down to Circular Quay. So that's just been newly developed and can take you all the way down now from the campus right down to the Circular Quay and round and all the way down to Randwick and Coogee area. So that's really nice way to get down there too. You can, of course, walk.
That.
Yeah.
When was that finished?
Just very recently, in the last couple of years, but we've probably not had chance to use it that much because of the pandemic and nobody's been in the city. So it probably just opened at the time that we couldn't actually use it. But I think, Simon, you've had chance to use it a little bit.
I catch the tram to work. So.
Yes. So Simon has that route now that goes directly to the campus, which is great. But yeah, we're also within a 10-minute walk to Chinatown, Darling Square, Darling Harbour, and all of those areas are like really buzzing with restaurants and cafes and eateries. So that's a great, you know, area if students want to go for lunch, go out for dinner, so that within walking distance really of everything in this local city area. So the location is really good.
Mm. And you mentioned in the beginning that students can live on campus. So you have on-campus apartments like right in the city center?
We do, yes. We actually have an on-campus accommodation right above our design and architecture building. and it has 735 beds or thereabout. And it's still fairly new, I would say, or at least they keep it fairly new. It's so the accommodation is probably better than, you know, some of our own flats that we have here, our own apartments. They have a really great vibe as well in the on-campus accommodation. They do lots of social activities. They do cooking classes. They do events. They do yoga classes, all sorts of things. They even have a kind of a room where you can use the computers. You have a room for music, all sorts of different facilities that they have for the students. And the way that they set it up is they usually have kind of like a 6-bed apartment. It can be 4 or 6-bed apartments, sometimes a little bit more. And each student would have a room within that apartment, and they would share a kitchen and share a couple of bathrooms as well. So that's the way that it's kind of designed. And a lot of our students do stay on campus because everything's included in the price, and we do try to make the price roughly 25% cheaper than the market rate in the rest of Sydney. And we do work with our accommodation provider to be able to offer a kind of like a first, you know, kind of guarantee for our students, so that if they want to apply, then our students kind of get first preference above other students. So it gives students a chance to be able to have some accommodation while they're in Sydney.
When you say our students, you mean study abroad students coming to UTS for one semester, right?
That's right, yes, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds great. And Simon mentioned earlier that there are some beaches in and around Sydney. And I know that our students often, because you don't typically have the chance here in Germany or in the German-speaking countries to live by the beach. So my question is it also possible for study abroad students to live near the beach?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, some students prefer that choice. They prefer to live sort of maybe in a house share or something like that with other students. And that's perfectly fine. Students can do that too. We have our accommodation, the UTS Housing have they do assist with helping students look for off-site accommodation as well. They have kind of like a large database which students can look at. And students often want to live maybe near Coogee or Bondi. I mean, Simon, you're from Coogee. Maybe you can, he's always on the tram with all of the students. So
on the tram or the bus, and it takes me directly to the university. And sometimes I see students after orientation, and they're like, oh, God, oh, there's the guy from orientation. Don't talk to him. So it is pretty convenient. It's about, the tram is about 25 minutes door to door for me. And then that would be to, down to Coogee is a, about a 10-minute walk. Same with Bondi. If you're going to Bondi, you can catch the train. You can be at Bondi Junction within 10 to 15 minutes. And then it's a short bus ride down to the beaches from there, probably about another 10 minutes. A lot of students do find that they like to live down there, but some, you know, some we suggest sometimes it's better maybe to live on campus and go to the beach, because then you don't have to do that commuting every day. But a lot of students, it's their dream to live at Bondi Beach. We say, go for it. It's totally possible.
So that definitely is a similarity to the students going to California, because that's what they love doing there as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that may be another benefit of Sydney, because in most cases they will need a car to go from kind of living at the beach to the university campus, especially in Southern California. Whereas I understand from what you've been saying, they can just hop on a bus or hop on a tram to get to uni. Yeah. So they won't need a car. And students in general wouldn't need a car studying in Sydney. And you probably wouldn't recommend they have a car, because it's just not fun driving in Sydney, probably.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big difference between anywhere in North America and Australia, is that the bigger Australian cities are much more like European cities, and that there's a very strong public transportation system. It may not be quite as fantastic as maybe central London or Berlin, but it's, you know, it's very efficient, runs, you know, most of the day and covers most of the city. So it's really easy to get around. We would absolutely advise against getting a car. That's not a great idea for study abroad in Australia.
So in addition to its location, UTS also has a lot to offer in terms of academics. Katie, you already mentioned the great ranking results overall, but there's also another ranking, the top 50 under 50 ranking, that ranks universities that are younger, so that are less than 50 years old. And I think Sydney has done really, really well in that ranking for a number of years now. I think you're the highest ranked Australian university in that ranking. How much longer are you able to participate in that ranking, though? How old is UTS now?
Well, UTS is an interesting beast, and we're actually, our roots go back to 1833, so we're quite old. Formally as a university, we're about 35 years old.
Okay,
so
you still have a couple of years to go.
Another 15 or so years to be number one in Australia, which we've been for the last 5 years now.
Wow.
On all the younger university rankings.
So. Okay, fantastic. So what are some subject areas that UTS is known for, both in terms of teaching and research?
That's a really good question. I mean, so we are a university of technology, but I suppose slightly different from the German concept of a university of technology. We actually are relatively comprehensive. I'd like to highlight that we're known for innovation. We have a faculty or a department of innovation, and we, in fact, want all of our students to take an innovation subject during their degree. We're known for sports science, which probably doesn't maybe pop to the front of people's minds. We have a great law program and usually ranked about number three in Australia for law. We have an amazing design suite of design programs. Our largest faculty or school college is business, and so we're particularly known for finance and areas of marketing. We have Australia's leading journalism program. We are fantastic for languages. We teach German, and we send quite a lot of students to Germany as a result. We're well known for creative writing. And of course, there's all of the tech things that you would think of, robotics, data science, AI, so IT engineering, all of the harder more challenging subjects that people would know a University of Technology for. But we have some new and emerging strengths in sustainability. We're really strong in forensic science. We're in the top three in the world for forensic science. So because students coming to us on study abroad don't have to be tied to a particular study area, they can actually pick and choose across a range of different options. So that's one of the great things about being a study abroad student is you can take an interdisciplinary approach and choose subjects from across all of our, you know, what we would normally have as different faculties or different degrees. You can choose subjects across those. So it's a really quite a comprehensive institution that covers a whole different kind of lot of aspects. But I think hopefully I've highlighted some of the areas that people might be excited or interested or maybe didn't think that a University of Technology would offer.
Yeah, and here I think I see also some parallels to California as well, because a lot of our students who choose to go to California, especially the Bay Area, they're always interested in innovation, you know, tech companies, the startup culture, and so forth. And and that apparently also plays a big role in Sydney. So would UTS be also a good fit for students who are interested in these areas, right?
Yes, absolutely. UTS has really seized this space as its own. Being a younger and more innovative university, we've always been known for being a little bit more cutting edge. So the innovation space is really one that we have filled, and we are renowned for that across Australia. And so UTS is located in the center of the tech hub for the state of New South Wales and Sydney. And the state is throwing in several billion dollars to add tech industry companies and building a number of very spectacular new buildings that will be finished in the next few years. So UTS is core to that tech hub. As I mentioned before, we want all students at UTS to have a taste of innovation. And even if that's a study abroad student, doesn't matter. And we encourage all students to imagine being the boss rather than working for the boss. Startups and innovation is really at our core. All students are encouraged to take electives in startups. We have a startup incubator, which has spun off in the last 2 years about 800 separate little companies. All students need to do is to just, you know, click a couple of buttons on our website and you're signed up to be in the startup ecosystem of the whole area. We're surrounded by small tech companies and startups, shared working spaces, and that's our neighborhood, is that area of the city. So it's really, you get that vibe when you're in the UTS area that there's new businesses being created and this great kind of energy. So we have opportunities for our students to do startups within as an extracurricular add-on experience. It's really super easy to get involved. They have all kinds of things happening at startups all the time. There's meetups, there's boot camps, there's all kinds of things like that. So if you really want to choose an innovation-focused university in Australia, UTS is your number one place to go to. With our location, it's just a great place to be for anyone interested in innovation.
I was just going to say that they're going to be building Atlassian, which is one of the big tech companies in Australia. They're going to be building that as well in that same zone next to Central Station. So,
yeah, a 40-story office building they're building right next to Central Station.
Wow. So. Okay. And I think one thing that's very interesting, and I don't know, Elias, if you're aware, but as opposed to the US, where it's difficult for international students to work, especially if they're just in the US for one semester, that is absolutely possible in Australia. So international students can work up to 20 hours a week during the semester and full time during breaks. So for students staying longer. So for students who want to maybe have a bit of a work experience and a side job while they spend a semester at UTS, they could seek employment at one of those little startups and just get some kind of additional work experience on their CV as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we actually quite encourage our students to do that because it's a great way to get involved with the community. And you never know, there's also working holiday visas. Students can come back to Australia and, you know, and potentially, you know, move here if they would like as well. So it's much more possible, much more flexible, I think, in Australia than some other locations.
And the wages are pretty good, I think, too.
Yeah, unlike the US, our minimum wage is $20 per hour.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that part about having the opportunity to work there. Yeah. So what else can students do to get involved on campus, perhaps?
Well, there's so many things students can do to get involved on the UTS campus. We've got about over 130 clubs and societies that cater for all different types of interests. So we've got cultural clubs, sports clubs, you name it. We've got a club for that. and we usually have a clubs day during orientation. So students can actually go around, meet all of the different clubs, talk to them, see what they're interested in, sign up and get involved with those throughout the semester. And it's a really nice way to use that as an opportunity to make friends and meet other people in that same interest group. We've also got an on-site fitness centre, which has a large gym and classrooms for gym classes. We have a large court as well that students can use. And we've also got a number of really fantastic extracurricular programmes. And these have all recently been tailored, I suppose, is the word, for our study abroad and exchange students. So this means that those programs, which may usually take a year, have now been tailored to be one semester so that our students can take them and they can get a badge. So we have the volunteering program, which is called SOL, and students can get involved in all different types of volunteering with the community. And they have workshops and different things to learn about social justice and sustainable development goals. And then they, after doing their volunteering, they can get a badge for that and a certificate. And then we have the Build Global Leadership Program. So again, it's a similar format. Students would attend all different kinds of on-campus and live events and workshops to learn more about global leadership. And again, there's a certificate for that. We have the startups that Simon's already mentioned. And we also have our own program that we developed recently, which is I suppose a study abroad ambassador, and students can sign up for that one, which is for to help us with our social media. They get involved in doing kind of like a work experience style of how we would do it from Australia, and then they could get a certificate for that as well. So yeah, there's heaps of things that students can get involved in depending on their own interests. We also do a free brekkie bar and a noodle night bar once a week on campus. So we've got heaps of things that students can get involved in.
So that sounds like, as you say, a lot of opportunities. I wonder if they find time to study for their classes, if they get involved in so many things. And speaking of classes, I did wonder, Simon, are there any units that... that are particularly popular with study abroad students or even unique to UTS? And I know it's a difficult question because UTS has so many classes to choose from, but...
Yeah, I think there are... Yeah, it's a hard one. I would say, why not choose an introductory forensic science subject, for example? You know, interested in CSI, we have, you know, we have a mortuary at UTS and we have a body farm, and I'll let people look up what a body farm is at UTS as well. Do an introductory forensic science program and stretch your mind as to what forensic science is, for example. Another thing, you know, take one of our innovation subjects, such as the one called Impossibilities to Possibilities. So think about how you could solve a problem by, you know, doing a design, taking a design thinking approach or an entrepreneurial approach to something. Or you could maybe take something, well, this is quite a popular one, which a lot of German students take, our management consulting subject. where students actually have a real life problem and solve it for a company, a small company, sometimes for a social enterprise as well. And they come up with a solution that's used in the real world.
And if they do that for a not-for-profit, they can also use the hours that they do for that for a soul badge. So the volunteering, so they can actually combine those two things, a subject with the volunteering badge as well. So that's a really great one that students enjoy doing.
So basically it's possible to, you know, to mix and match across different faculties. We don't say, oh, you're a science student, you must stick to science. You can do any of our programs across business or law or health, for example. So it's really up to you to choose. And we assist you with selecting those and getting into those classes.
So do you also have any classes that that will help students understand Australia better, like classes about Australian society, Australian culture, business in Australia?
Yes, absolutely. And we've actually just finished a new subject guide, which helps students to find these kind of subjects, because we've got these kind of different subjects across all our faculties. So we have quite a few in our arts and social sciences faculty, but we may have something like you just mentioned, Australian business, for example. So we do have them across all our different streams. So we've pulled together a guide which helps students to find these exact kind of classes that might be interested in learning more about the Australian culture and lifestyle. And we've also included, we've recently built a new platform so that all our students, when they come to Australia, will go through this platform where we've built, learning more about Indigenous Australia, multicultural Australia, and all of that is part of, and all the lifestyle, pop culture, all of those different things. All of that is part of our new platform that we call Culture Connect, which all students will have access to when they join the program. So, yeah.
So I want to come back to something that Simon has just touched on, and that was the topic of registration. So I was wondering, how does registration work for study abroad students at UTS? How do they choose their courses?
Well, students usually choose their courses when they apply. So on their application form, they can list the different preferences. And we have created, I just kind of mentioned briefly before, but we created some really handy subject guides for each faculty, which really helps students to kind of identify which of them might be the most interesting subjects, the most popular. We also put them into different levels. So if you're an undergraduate or a postgraduate, it helps you identify which kind of level those subjects might be at. Sometimes our coding system at UTS might not be that intuitive, you know, it's kind of 21638. It's like, what does that number mean? So we've tried to help students understand that by putting some sections into the guides, which help with the kind of level and year that a student would normally take those subjects. And also what session those are provided in, whether it's our autumn or spring session. And all of these guides link to our online handbook. So then this gives a more comprehensive description of the subjects for the students. So it gives an idea of what the content and the assessment would be. And students can then print that off if they want, or send that to their home academics to get their approval for those subjects. So that really helps the students, guide them in the kind of direction that they want to take those subjects. And with, like I mentioned, we've got a few new guides this time around. So if a student is particularly interested in something like sustainability or innovation and creativity or Australian culture that we mentioned earlier, we've just created three new guides which shows all of those subjects across the different faculties.
Okay, so I understand that students choose their courses pretty early on in the application process. And would you say, is it easy or difficult for students to get their preferred courses?
Yeah, I would say most students get into their preferred courses as long as they meet the prerequisites for that course. So they need to be kind of choosing courses in the beginning that are at the appropriate level. But if they're choosing electives or something at a first year level, then most of those are approved. They are approved by our faculty. So students usually submit their transcript and we can see what they've done prior. It's a pretty simple process, and we get that back to the students usually with their offer so that they can see what they've been approved for. Yeah, and they can change their mind later down the line as well if they want to. That's not a problem.
So course registration is one of the areas that our students are often concerned about because, of course, they have to meet certain requirements from their home university. Another topic that students are sometimes concerned about is the cost involved with studying abroad. So we were happy to learn that there are several ways study abroad students can save a little money when coming to UTS. Can you maybe explain the difference between the Study Abroad 24 and the Study Abroad 18 program to us?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose to put it in context, UTS uses a credit point system where we have 24 credit points is equivalent to around about 30 ECTS credit points. So that would be what we would call a full semester load, which is usually around, you know, usually around three or four subjects. Now, students can also still get a student visa if they're taking 18 credit points. That still meets the requirements. And usually, you know, the funding that students can get from the BAUFOG actually covers that kind of price, and it's a bit more affordable for the students. So that 18 credit points would usually be around three subjects. And so we do give this option as well for students if they want that kind of still chance to come and enjoy this study abroad experience, but not necessarily afford that higher price.
Right. So they basically take one less course and they also pay a lower price.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. But three courses or 18 credit points is the minimum they need to take in order to be considered full-time students and qualify for the student visa.
That's right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Got it. All right. And what about scholarships? That's the million-dollar question we always get. What about scholarships? Does UTS offer scholarships for study abroad students as well?
I might comment on that one. Yes, we do. So we have what we call our Study Abroad Excellence Awards. That's for students who have a good academic performance. They're not impossible to get. And we have no limit on those. So there's no application process. We'll assess a student's grades. And I think maybe some of our partners, such as College Contact, might know approximately what those grades are from previous years. So if you have strong academic grades, you should consider applying, because we will give you, if you're enrolled full-time, a $2,000 fee scholarship, so a reduction of your fees, which is fairly significant. Or if you're doing an 18 credit point load, we'll reduce it by $1,000. We normally would award about 30 to 40 of those in any one session. So, mm-hmm. So it's quite generous and really simple. You don't need to apply. We'll just assess.
I was just going to say, you basically, every study abroad student who applies goes through the process and you'll check their grades. And if they qualify, they will automatically be notified.
Yeah. Congratulations. You've got a grant.
Yeah. Wow. And it's like, I didn't apply for one. How did that happen? So yeah. Oh, fantastic. That's great. So we've talked a lot about UTS and its study abroad program in the past 40, 45 minutes. But a semester abroad is, of course, not all work and no play. So we recently published an article on our website that described a perfect day in the life of a study abroad student in Sydney. And we thought that kind of towards the end of this episode, it would be fun to take this a step further with you. So this question basically goes to both of you. What does a perfect weekend in Sydney look like for you? Where do you go and what do you do?
Well, I'll go first. So my partner and I are very keen, well, he's more keen than me, but he's a very keen person on outdoors and the natural environment. Sometimes we have to compromise on this, as long as I have a couple of days warning. So he loves to go for a bushwalk. So probably for me on a Saturday, it's likely that we'll get up not too early, because I'm not an early bird, and get in the car, or you can do it on the train as well, and probably go to either Royal National Park or to Ku-ring-gai Chase National Park, which are just 30-40 minutes from the city. And the city is in fact surrounded by completely by these national parks. And we would go for probably a 10-kilometer bushwalk. I love to take photographs, and Alex would see these sometimes on my Facebook of all the beautiful wildflowers.
And birds.
Yeah, and birds. Birds, I'm very keen on birds.
And echidnas.
And echidnas. Yes, there was an echidna last weekend on my first bushwalk for a while.
I saw that.
And probably we'll end up at a beach at the national park. We didn't go for a swim this weekend, but quite often drop in for a bit of a swim, cool off, then walk back. So that would probably be my Saturday, would be going somewhere like that, and maybe going to have a beer at the pub down at Wollongong or something afterwards. Then probably the next day, I would insist on being in the city. So we'd probably get up a little bit later, go to my local cafe, which is called one of my local favorite ones, called The Lion and the Buffalo. It's run by a crazy Polish woman, and she makes absolutely killer coffee, a great ramen, and Polish cakes. And so I'll have coffee, and for a weird combination probably of
speaking of multicultural, yeah.
And then I would probably go walk down from there down to either Wiley's Baths, and have a look at that one on the internet, everyone. Wiley's Baths at Coogee is a fantastic place where you can sit. It's a pool at the beach. And Sydney is unique in the world for having pools at the beach. So it's a saltwater pool, and you can jump in, have a swim, and you can sit on the deck there, have an ice cream. My friends would probably drop past. I'll text them and say, hey, drop into Wiley's and say hi, and hang out all afternoon and read a book there. So that's my perfect weekend.
Right. I actually went there. That was the starting point of my Coogee to Bondi experience. So I think it might have been your recommendation. So yeah. I'm fairly sure it was. But yeah. All right, great. So Katie, what does your perfect weekend look like?
Well, mine's not quite as glamorous as Simon's because I have two kids. So mine is what my perfect weekend would look like if I could just, move the kids to the babysitters for the weekend. I would probably go with a friend, have some brunch. Ozzy's doing really great brunches with avo and toast and nice coffee somewhere, and head into the city and do some shopping at the Queen Victoria Building and do some nice kind of, wandering around and enclosed shopping. And then probably maybe something like a date night in the evening in Newtown. Newtown's not too far from where we live, and it's just has so many really cool restaurants and bars with live music. It's a really, really nice, cool place to kind of hang out and have all different types of cuisine. So they've got Turkish, Italian. There's a really great place called Colombo Social, which is kind of a refugee-run eatery. So they do Sri Lankan food, really yummy, and all the kind of, it's a social enterprise. So that's a really great place to go. But yeah, it's really vibrant and quite a fun place to go at night. And then Sunday, probably we would usually take a kind of like a family day trip out somewhere. So not too long ago, we went kayaking on the Warrenora River, which was really nice. We went to, they've got something called the Boat Shed, which is a really, really nice kind of like, gastro pub type thing on the waterfront. And you can have brunch, breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever you want there, right on the riverfront there. And you can also hire a kayak and just, take it down the river and have some fun. There's a little tiny beachside that you can go and park up on and have a picnic if you wanted to do that instead. So that was really nice. Something probably like that we would do, family trips out to different places. There's so many, so many getaways from Sydney that are within easy reach within an hour that you can really escape from, city life. and just really enjoy their kind of like national parks or the wildlife and things. There's really lots of places you could go to very, very easily in an hour. So, yeah, we've got one coming up soon, which is in, we're going to Bundina for the weekend, which is actually, yeah, the tip of the Royal National Park. It's really beautiful there, and you can actually take a ferry over from Cronulla over to Bundina, and they have Aboriginal artwork in the caves there and different things. So, yeah, it's we're looking forward to going there as well. So, yeah, something like that usually.
That sounds fantastic. So, Elias, if you had to choose which weekend option
are you gonna make me choose?
Would be the one you'd pick. Yeah, this or that. Which one would you prefer?
It's okay. I'll let you off the list.
I can.
You can choose Simon's glamorous lifestyle.
Yeah, maybe.
You can just spend Saturday with Katie and Sunday with Elijah or something like that. Very diplomatic.
Yeah, both weekends sound really good. Yeah. I can't choose. Right. I'm sorry.
All right. So let's hope that Katie and Simon are better in choosing alternatives, because we're heading towards the end of the episode, but we can't finish the episode without our this or that question round. So we have a couple of questions where we give you two options, and you just choose the one you prefer and maybe provide a little bit of context for the audience as to why you choose a certain option. They're not difficult and hopefully a little bit of fun. So to warm up, what do you prefer, a flat white or a long black?
For me, it's a latte, but probably a flat white in that case.
For me, definitely a flat white. I prefer it much more milky and, frothy. Yeah, I prefer a flat white.
Right. So those are both coffee types,
yes.
Right? So perfect. I mean, the flat white has made it to Germany, but the long black, I think, isn't as available here.
Yeah, there's a million different kinds of coffee types. So, there's quite a complicated language. And you need to, it needs to roll off your tongue straight away for the barista. So.
All right, perfect. Smashed avocado or Vegemite on toast?
Oh, smashed avocado easily. Vegemite, I still have traumas from when I went backpacking to Australia when I was younger. and I thought chocolate spread on toast. And I took a really big bite and I was traumatized by that, so it was what I was expecting in my mouth. So
oh my god, because you are from the UK originally, just to kind of clarify for the audience.
I am, okay. Yes, and I went backpacking a long time ago in my 20s, and yes, that was an experience from my time then.
Well, I mean, I'd have to say I don't actually have Vegemite that often, but it's something that's very at my core. I lived in Japan for 3 years and, I constantly was sending home for jars of Vegemite. And in particular, if you're feeling a little bit sick or a little bit sad, Vegemite is really a good pick-me-up. And so, I would have to say it's very Australian. You should definitely try it. A lot of people don't like it, but even my partner, who's American, now likes Vegemite. So, it kind of worms its way into your life, I think.
Interesting. We have an Australian gelato place here in Frankfurt, close to where I live, and they recently had a daily special with Vegemite ice cream. And I remember it's actually quite good. I actually tried it the first time on the Great Ocean Road in Australia, where there was an ice cream shop that had Vegemite ice cream as well. But no, it's actually better than you think. Mm. So I like it better than the pure thing. Yeah. So
right.
Quite salty, I suppose. The taste is quite salty.
It's good for a hangover. I will tell you, it's very good for a hangover.
I wonder, Elias, do you know what Vegemite is, or have you even tried it maybe?
I've heard of it. I haven't tried it yet. It sure wouldn't occur to me to order Vegemite ice cream. I can tell you that.
But you haven't tried it.
I know, even though I haven't tried it. I've heard people talk about it, and it's more like, I mean, if Simon says it grows on you, I guess the people I've talked to, they've only had it once or twice. So
yeah.
Still, Yeah.
Okay. Wombats or koalas? Which one's a cuter?
Oh. I think wombats.
I think wombats too.
They're quite just big and dumb and cute and... I don't know. Yeah. I think we always call my son a little wombat. So maybe not. He just has this big head and yeah. So
it's like everybody talks about kangaroos and koalas, but I think wombats are often overlooked.
Yeah. I have a particular love for the platypus. And a couple of years ago, they're very shy and hard to find in rivers. But they are around, so I made it my New Year's resolution to be the year of the platypus, and I got to see three platypus in my searches for platypus that year. And last year, I was very fortunate to go to Tasmania, and I got to see a Tasmanian platypus, which is a little bit extra rare, and they're much larger than the platypus on the mainland of Australia, and less shy. And so this platypus was... like visible in the river and frolicking around and scratching itself, and I was totally in heaven. So yeah,
right. So yeah, the platypus. I think maybe I should give the German word. It's a Schnabeltier.
Oh my goodness.
In German. So because I'm not sure if everybody in the audience will immediately kind of have a picture in mind, but it's this long brown animal that has
a beak.
Is it a beak?
Yeah.
And it lives in the rivers, and it's a lot of different things in one animal. Basically.
Yes, it is. It's quite wrong. It's like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah. So typically Australian. Yeah. So, all right. Aussie rules football or cricket?
Oh.
Katie, you seem like neither.
I'm a Sydney Swans member, so absolutely AFL. You will often find me that might also be one of my ideal weekend activities. You'll often find me at a Sydney Swans match at the Sydney Cricket Ground. I would really encourage students, if they come, to go to an AFL match. It's very difficult to describe what the sport is like. It's kind of like a combination of football and basketball and rugby together. So it's very fast moving. There are lots of players and relatively few rules. So it makes, when you first see it, it's like, what on earth is happening? And why are they punching one another? And oh my God. There was a goal. Yay. You know, unlike in football where there's one goal in 90 minutes, there's regularly in a match.
If you're lucky, yeah.
There's goals, you know, 15 to 20 goals. So it's constantly exciting. It's a great game. So cricket, yeah. Cricket, nah, yeah, not so much. My brother loved cricket and I hated it. I was terrible at it. So, yeah, no.
All right. And then final question, Bondi or Coogee? It's probably easy for Simon, yeah, but...
Definitely Coogee for me. I think for lots of people, Bondi initially is the place that people know it's most famous. And it definitely, it's really beautiful and it's got loads of, you know, great bars and restaurants. And it's just, a really great place. But I just like the feel more of Coogee, and I think it just has a much more how to describe it? I don't know. I just get that a nicer feel when I go to Coogee. What about you?
Right, and we're talking beaches here, so those are both beaches in Sydney, right? Yeah.
For me, sure. If you put on your big glamour-puss face and puff out your lips, stick out your bum and your boobs. That's Bondi.
It's like the Baywatch.
Yeah, that's it. It's like the Baywatch, yeah.
Yeah, like you really have to be like, yeah, I'm going to Bondi, and just, you know, you're like, you have to assume
struck your stuff.
Being, you know, glamorous. I'm going to be glamorous. I'm going to be fantastic. And it is really fun. And I think actually, to be honest, the swimming is probably better at Bondi than it could be. But Coogee is much more cozy, much less judgmental, I suppose, if you're not quite as perfect or glamorous. So I would say both. And you can walk between both. Do both in a weekend and go to all the other beaches in between. There's Tamarama and Bronte and Clovelly. I love swimming in Clovelly. That's one of my favorite swimming spots, where you can just jump off the edge, it's straight into the water. You don't even have to go in the sand. So there's a what, 38 beaches in Sydney. So they're just a few of them. So there's one for every weekend if you came for a year on study abroad.
And I mentioned the Bondi to Coogee walk, or the Coogee to Bondi walk. Yeah. Can you maybe comment on that a little bit? Because I think that is one thing that that a student absolutely has to do when they come to Sydney, right?
So Sydney actually has a number of kind of longish walks where you can walk. In fact, now you can walk all the way from Manly all the way around the harbour to the other end, to Watson's Bay. But one of the most famous and one of the first walks that they kind of devised is Bondi to Coogee, or Coogee to Bondi. It's about 7 or 8 kilometres, I think, and takes anywhere between, 2 hours and 4 hours. It wanders along the cliffs. So you start at Bondi Beach and you walk along the cliff path with beautiful views of the ocean, of north and south, and all of the interesting suburbs. And you stop at each of the beaches, have a swim. There's pools at the beach as well. There's cafes, restaurants all along the way, and it's just, I think it is absolutely one of the must-do things that you can do in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I would probably go on it, even though I live here and it's an ordinary thing to do. I'd probably go 5 times a year. And do part of it. In fact, last few months we've been in lockdown, and I did a night walk, and we had a few drinks, and then we walked along the cliffs at night. You go through cemeteries, all kinds. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I feel like the landscape changes so much from one place to another. Like in Coogee, it's very kind of residential. Quiet and calm, and then you walk along, you have these little, say, Bronte and some of the other smaller beaches, and then when you get closer to Bondi, you have this stretch where there is a cemetery kind of on the cliff, basically overlooking the ocean. So it's like the cemetery with a view, and you can basically walk on a path next to the cemetery, and it's not as morbid as it sounds, especially during daytime when the sun is out. And then you get closer to Bondi, and this whole kind of area opens up, and Bondi is a lot wider than some of the other beaches that are more narrow, and I think it's just a really, really interesting place, and it tells you a lot about the different neighborhoods and the different kind of lifestyles and people of Sydney. And you mentioned the pool several times, and just maybe to give some sort of extra information to the audience, because when we hear pools, we think of chlorine water, blue, separate lanes, things like that. That's not what you're talking about. Those are actually rock pools. So it's
rock pools, yes.
It's ocean water, but they are kind of separated from the open waters a little bit. I don't know how best to explain it.
Yeah, so they were originally devised when, European settlers moved here, a lot of people didn't really know how to swim. So they were initially devised as a safe place where people could paddle around without having to be in the waves, because the surf can be quite strong in Sydney. But they've become a tradition, and they're dotted all along the beaches of Sydney. And they're just such a great place to go, where there's kids frolicking around and parents, and people wake up really early in the morning and do laps. They do have some lap pools as well. So they're really an interesting institution in Sydney, something quite different from anywhere else in the world.
And they're either free or super cheap. You pay as you go. And they're basically in the ocean. So there's just kind of a lining, and they're part of the ocean. And when the surf is very strong, you can actually have waves kind of bringing new water into the rock pools and out. Yeah. So it's I loved it. It also means they can be quite chilly, like they're not heated typically. So I remember that the first one I went to, I was like, it was really, 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 really cold. But it was so much fun. And I think that is definitely, like, if you only have that would be my perfect weekend. If I only had one weekend in Sydney, that's what I would do. What direction would you recommend? Final question for today. Bondi to Coogee or Coogee to Bondi? Because as I said, I did Coogee to Bondi, and I loved it, but I haven't done it the other way around. So
it's fine either way. I mean, I think whatever you do, end up at a pub. That would be my suggestion.
I ended up at Messina for some gelato in Bondi. So
I started with avocado on toast in Sydney at a cafe, and then I went and had ice cream at the very end.
Sounds a perfect way to do it.
It was so fun, yeah.
And the Coogee Pavilion, if you're coming from Bondi, and the Coogee Pavilion is a great has a great rooftop pub overlooking the beach. It's fantastic. Or the North Bondi Surf Lifesavers, or the Bondi Surf Lifesavers. If you're ending up at Bondi, both places, great place to wind up the walk and, you know, have a few beers.
All right, sounds good.
Yep.
So Elias, is Sydney worth a trip?
Definitely, yeah. So
have we persuaded you yet?
I would say you made it to the second round, definitely. you put it diplomatically. But yeah, I love California, but Sydney, I think I would have a lot of fun there. I think students should definitely consider it as their study abroad destination. And yeah, I really like the mixture of, you know, we talked about the city center and the city life and also all the nature and the beaches and everything surrounding it. And I think, yeah, I could listen to you guys talk about Sydney and UTS for hours. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you love coffee, as we all know.
To the extent.
And if you love coffee, you have to come to Australia, because I never understood it. I know that before I visited Australia, I had a few Australian friends who kind of complained about the coffee in Germany, and they talked about kind of Australia being the place for coffee. And I kind of put the US and Australia in one kind of basket and was like, coffee in the US is bad. It must be bad in Australia as well. I couldn't have been more wrong. Like I've yet to have a really bad coffee in Australia. Yeah. So coffee is amazing. And Australians are quite, they can be coffee snobs, to put it mildly.
Same goes for
when
me.
They go abroad and they don't find. Yeah.
When I went to Italy a few years ago, I was extremely disappointed with Italian coffee. I was like, this is revolting. You know?
Yeah, no.
I mean, you can get good coffee in Italy, but I must have had just a few bad ones to start out with. And I was very upset at the quality of coffee in Italy. I was like, well, this is terrible. I can't wait to go home.
So you've made enemies in California, enemies in Melbourne, and now you've also made enemies in Italy. Yep. So I think we should end this before there's no more places you can go and visit. So I just want to take this opportunity to thank you for joining us today. And for providing us with a lot of insights into both UTS and Sydney and Australia. And I hope that, especially with the borders hopefully opening up next year, that we will have some students that we can send your way next year to enjoy coffee, food, beaches, wildlife, all of that. And for now, it's thank you so much. Have a good evening, because it's getting late where you are. And
thank you, Alex and Elias, and we'd love to welcome some students to come and study with us and have a great time. So thank you very much. It's been really fun.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, ich würde sagen, allein für die This or That Questions am Ende hat es sich schon gelohnt, so früh aufzustehen.
Ja, definitiv. Mit dem Wein hat es echt Spaß gemacht. Sydney klingt wirklich wie ein tolles Ziel für ein Auslandssemester und ich könnte mir durchaus vorstellen, da mal hinzureisen, wenn es wieder möglich ist.
Ich sag ja, deine Bucketlist wird immer länger.
Das stimmt. Und Lust auf Kaffee habe ich jetzt auch.
Das glaube ich, aber das lässt sich ja jetzt auch etwas einfacher bewerkstelligen als ein Flug nach Australien, ne? Aber Spaß beiseite, wenn ihr jetzt auch Lust bekommen habt, ein Auslandssemester in Sydney zu machen, dann schaut doch mal in unseren Shownotes vorbei. Dort findet ihr nämlich Links zum Hochschulprofil der UTS und zu den Erfahrungsberichten ehemaliger Study Abroad Studierender.
Außerdem haben wir euch dort den Artikel unserer Redakteurin Theresa verlinkt, in dem sie einen perfekten Tag in Sydney beschreibt.
Zu guter Letzt findet ihr in den Shownotes natürlich auch noch einmal unsere Kontaktdaten. Schreibt uns einfach eine E-Mail oder ruft uns an, wenn ihr Fragen zur UTS habt oder wenn ihr euch einfach ganz allgemein zum Auslandssemester beraten lassen möchtet. Wir schicken euch dann auch gern unsere kostenlose Bewerbungsanleitung für die UTS zu, in der ihr viele weitere Tipps und Infos findet.
Stichwort kostenlos. Auch unser gesamter Beratungs- und Bewerbungsservice ist für euch komplett kostenlos, weil wir von unseren Partnerhochschulen für unsere Arbeit bezahlt werden.
Die nächste Folge wird auch wieder eine ganz besondere, denn dann werden wir die California State University Long Beach zu Gast haben, an der du, Elias, dein Auslandsjahr verbracht hast.
Oh yeah.
Also, für heute sagen wir vielen Dank fürs Zuhören, viele Grüße und habt eine gute Zeit.